2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it is without question one of the ultimate Cinderella stories in music of all time.
That album doing as well as it did is the only thing that made it possible to do a second, third one, because there was no way that I was going to be able to write the songs for additional albums in the kind of time frame that, like some bands do, pumping one out a year or even shorter, I guess, in the old days. So it was only because it sold so well that it was possible to take the time to do it and do it again. If it had been a 900,000 seller instead of a 9 million seller, I think there probably wouldn't be a Boston in existence today.
Hi, this is Tom Scholz in the studio for the first Boston album.
When quietly released without any fanfare whatsoever, the first album bearing the city name of Boston was the culmination of, for all practical purposes, a 7-year demo tape from the rented basement full of used semi-pro recording equipment in suburban Beantown, belonging to guitarist, songwriter, engineer Tom Scholz. What happened next is the stuff of legend. After the initial 9 million bought the debut, containing More Than a Feeling, Peace of Mind, Foreplay, Long Time, Rock and Roll Band, Hitch a Ride, and Smokin'. A year before releasing what quickly became the biggest selling debut album in music history, the band Boston didn't even exist. In 1976, Tom Scholz's 7-year basement tapes would emerge out of nowhere to rewrite the record books on popularity and profits. The Cinderella story of Scholz in Boston tends to be reduced by some to astronomical numbers. For instance, over 17 million sold to date. And it may seem appropriate for a brainiac MIT mechanical engineering graduate. While his first time at bat resulted in the grandest of slams, over the next 4 decades, the subsequent releases from this musical mad scientist would unrealistically and probably unfairly be compared to Boston's record-setting first release as the most popular debut album ever. That whirlwind success was unexpected and a little uncomfortable for Tom Scholz. He'd grown up in Toledo, Ohio, known more for his basketball abilities than his musical talent. Scholz went to Boston in the fall of 1965 to study mechanical engineering at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT. Tom Scholz had no intention of becoming a performer.
Actually, it wasn't performing so much. I just liked music. I liked music since I was old enough to turn the record player on when I was a little kid. So that was all. I just happened to take a liking to popular music when it started to reach what I think today is real rock and roll. That was, in other words, after the Elvis Presley era. I wasn't interested at all in that kind of stuff. When I heard the Kinks play the first time and the Yardbirds play the first time and the Birds sing their harmonies, that's when I got interested in music. And that's when I decided to start playing it. At night I could get WBZ in Toledo, Ohio. So I used to listen to Boston Sounds when I was in high school in Toledo, doing homework at night. And so I was actually influenced by Boston long before I got here.
But how long were you a Buckeye?
Till 18. I grew up there completely. Well, some people think I've never quite grown up, but in as much as it was possible, I grew up there. And I left to go to school in Boston. I never seen the city before until I drove up here to register, and it was quite a shock. Toledo's a lot smaller place, you know.
Money.
Rock and Roll Band is the autobiographical song which tells the story of Tom Scholz in the earliest days of the Boston saga, when Scholz was a student at the prestigious Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
So what did you come to school at MIT for? Obviously not to be in a rock and roll band.
No, I came to be a mechanical engineer so that I could do a better job putting the engine back together on my 55 T-Bird. Little did I know, it wasn't going to teach me a thing about putting engines together. I did learn a few things, though, that helped me a lot later on, in music. Understanding physics also helps you understand an enormous amount about music and sound. And so MIT was an excellent training for what I was going to do later, although I didn't realize it at the time. When I came up here, I had never touched a guitar. I started when I was about a junior in college or so. I was playing keyboards, and the guitar players that I played with were so lousy, I figured anybody could do it better. So I decided to give it a try myself. Unfortunately, I realized not anybody could do it better, because I couldn't. But after a few years, I started to come along.
After graduating from MIT, Tom Scholz was hired by the Polaroid Corporation, all the while writing the songs and making the recordings, which would eventually form the basis of the first Boston album. These earliest recordings, going all the way back to 1969, were made in drummer Jim Mazdia's basement. By 1971, area club musicians Barry Goodrow on rhythm guitar and bass player Fran Sheehan had been attracted to Scholz's basement tapes. Original Boston lead singer Brad Delp told me how Brad got involved.
Well, I've been kicking around for a number of years in cover bands, never had been in a band that had done any original material. I think it was around 1970. I was in one such band that was having trouble getting out of rehearsals to go out and play. And someone mentioned that there was a band playing not far from there that was looking for a vocalist. So I went down, and that was the first time I met Tom. And Jim Mazdia was playing drums at the time. I think their vocalist had just left for some reason unknown to me. It seems to me it was a couple weeks later we went into a local demo studio and demoed a couple of songs and kept going from there. One thing that I was very impressed with when I first ran into those guys was that they were doing original material.
Right.
And I hadn't been in a band up to that point that had any of their own material. Plus they said, we're going in the studio in a couple weeks, and I'd never been in a studio at that point. So I'd played in cover bands since I was about 13 or so. It was fun and good training, but here I thought it was a real golden opportunity to get in on the ground floor or something.
music, forget the day, and dream of a girl I used to know. I close my eyes and she slipped away. She slipped
Brad Delp singing More Than a Feeling, the first single from Boston's debut in the late summer of 1976, may have started at the ground floor, but it was about to take the band by express elevator to the top. Tom Scholz knew instantly that Delp's voice was the sound that Tom needed to sing his songs.
Brad came down and sang a couple of songs in Jim's basement, and then came out to the studio that we were working at, where I was doing my usual, trying to put a demo together of a song, and he sang one track, and I considered handcuffing myself to him at that point and throwing away the key just to make sure that I could that he'd be there for the next one. We worked off and on after that, and he sang vocals on all the recordings that I did. I'd do the instruments, usually with some help from Jim on the drums. And Brad would sing all the vocals.
Unknowingly, with his basement tapes, Tom Scholz was starting a revolution in the recording industry about where professional music could be made and by whom, a trend that has been fully realized today.
That one was recorded in a basement of an apartment house in Watertown, Massachusetts. And there was somebody living on the second floor of it. And I remember the sound used to go right up to the floors. So we could only work on it before 5 o'clock while they were away at work. Yeah, it was a strange studio. It was also a rather unusual one. It had an old Scully 12-track recorder that I had gotten from somebody when it became obsolete, which was what the master was done on. A couple hundred dollars worth of microphones and a small semi-pro mixing board. I mean, the monitors were driven by a Dynakit power amp.
I suppose you built it yourself.
No, actually, I didn't have time to do it. I had gotten used from somebody, and a couple of bookshelf speakers, and that's what most of the tracks were. Where most of the tracks were recorded.
Day is night in New York City. Smoke like water.
Hitch a Ride on Boston's debut really spotlights the remarkable voice and harmonies of Brad Delp. Next, Tom Scholz will tell you how his day job at Polaroid funded his passion for writing and recording, eventually allowing those basement tapes to escape. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Tom Scholz.
Welcome back in the studio for the anniversary of the first Boston album. I'm Tom Scholz with Redbeard.
Thanks, Tom. It is the anniversary of the record-setting first Boston album, the quaint homemade project of MIT graduate and then Polaroid Corporation engineer Tom Scholz, who admits that Tom was leading a Jekyll and Hyde lifestyle in the mid-1970s.
I was involved in an instant movie project, which unfortunately wasn't completed until after the advent of video, and they lost the whole thing. It was they couldn't sell it because video had too many advantages.
So by day you were working in a high-tech corporate environment, and then you'd run back to the basement in Watertown and do what you really wanted to do?
Yeah, I worked in a low-tech private environment. It was strictly what I wanted to do at that time, too. I was, trying to record some songs. You know, it certainly wasn't an occupation. It was a very expensive hobby. So most of the record was done, on a budget of about $1,700, I think. The investment was really before the $1,700. It was my savings for 7 years working, at a high-paying job and down the drain, basically, on recording songs.
Oh,
Tom Scholz's meticulous demo tapes finally resulted in a record deal with giant CBS Records. But there was a catch. No doubt due to union rules, there was a clause in every CBS Records artist contract which mandated that any act on their label recording within 250 miles had to use the label's own Manhattan studio. That became a problem for Tom Scholz just up the road in his basement in Watertown, Massachusetts. So how did Scholz, completely unknown with no track record, get complete artistic control from the big record company from the beginning?
They didn't knowingly let me have that kind of control either. They thought that the record was being recorded in L.A. By the other guy listed as a producer, John Boylan, in Capitol Studios in L.A., while I was actually doing it in the basement of the apartment house. Now, he did record one track, Let Me Take You Home, out there with Brad and the other three guys that we eventually chose to take on the road. And then I came out and just put a keyboard part on it. But the story was that he took these guys out there, got them an apartment, and they'd go to work in the studio, and they recorded some tracks for this and that. John took off and went skiing for a couple of weeks, and I went to work in the basement of this apartment house. So they didn't know that, and they didn't really, I don't think they really heard anything until they heard a pretty well completed mixed version of side one of the album, about 6 months after I got started. Maybe it was five. I don't think they had any clue, and I don't think they would have gone along with it. And I always thought one of John's greatest contributions to that was the fact that he managed to get that pulled off and made it possible for that album to be recorded in such a strange manner. I think he probably stuck his neck out there quite a bit because, if it hadn't worked. He definitely deserves a lot of credit.
still to come. Tom Scholz returns in the studio to reveal what it feels like to have your first single go on almost 400 radio stations in 2 weeks after release. Oh my. Keep up to date in the studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard.
Welcome back in the studio for the anniversary of the first Boston album. I'm Tom Scholz with Redbeard.
Again, thank you, Tom. With Saturation, national airplay on Boston's first single, More Than a Feeling, Tom Scholz took a hastily assembled band of Brad Delp, Barry Goodrow, and Fran Sheehan on guitars, and Sib Hashian replacing Jim Masdia on drums, to tour rock clubs. But the audiences grew in just a few short months to where Boston was headlining theaters and then arenas and selling out at every level. Brad Delp, who sadly passed away in March 2007, told me when he actually realized just how big that first Boston album was getting.
Everything happened so fast with that first tour, and we made such leaps from playing clubs to playing Madison Square Garden. And we would hear these sales figures, you just sold 1 million, you sold 2 million, whatever. It was like playing Monopoly or something, you know, it wasn't real. And I can honestly say I never once thought about, we're making a lot of money. It didn't occur to me because we were so busy going out and seeing different audiences everywhere we went to. That was the reality while we're out. So when I got home, I had an apartment, you know, that I was living in, and we had an accountant to handle things. So I called up and I said, I'm thinking about maybe buying a house. Can I do that? And my accountant said, how many?
Take you away. Again.
no new rock band had ever been so in sync with mainstream musical appetites as Boston was in 1976. The combination of soaring guitar sounds, earnest but uncomplicated lyrics, densely packed arrangements, and strong melody struck a massive chord for the record-buying public, resulting in sales of over 17 million to date. Only Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction has done more for a debut. Here's Tom Scholz.
That album doing as well as it did is the only thing that made it possible to do a second, third one. Because there was no way that I was going to be able to write the songs for additional albums in the kind of time frame that, like some bands do, pumping one out a year or even shorter, I guess, in the old days. That was impossible. So it was only because it sold so well that it was possible to take the time to do it and do it again. It was about 7 years of work to get that first record done. There was no way that I was going to work under those circumstances again to do another one. In other words, having absolutely nothing to show for working 40 hours a week for 7 years except a demo tape, because that's what I had before the first record hit. I had a demo tape to show from 7 years of working at Polaroid and spending most of my spare time on music. I wasn't about to do that again, most certainly. And the only thing that made it possible to do another one was the fact that the money was available to be able to do it and do it right under not such adverse circumstances. And also that there would be somebody there waiting to hear it, you know, a record company to release it and an audience to hear it. If it had been a 700 or 900,000 seller instead of a 9 million seller, I think there probably wouldn't be a Boston in existence today.
After its late summer 1976 release, it took only 7 weeks to sell 500,000 copies of that first Boston album. 1 million in the first 3 months, another 1 million a month after that. Tom Scholz suddenly found himself yanked out of the solitude of his basement studio, abruptly thrust into the high-stakes world of rock and roll stardom and big-time money. It was a rude awakening. I asked Tom Scholz if he suddenly felt pressured.
Well, it put lots of pressure on, and put incredible pressure. It drove people, it brought out the worst in all kinds of people. You know, they were managers clawing for money And everybody who could get anything from it tried to get as much as they could and keep it. It all came back in one way or another back to me and applied pressure to me. It applied some pressure to Brad too. That's the other side of it. Anytime you have something that's that successful, there will be those people whose lives are spent trying to find ways to get a share of some money. They will spend enormous effort trying to get it if they see it, because they know that if they try hard enough, somebody will just give them some to make them go away.
But before the greed and power struggles would tarnish the platinum, I asked Tom Scholz how the initial early fairy tale success of that first Boston album changed his life.
You know, it didn't change things that much for me, except that it gave me the freedom to spend as much time as I wanted on musical pursuits instead of other things. Of course, that led to me spending all of my time on musical pursuits, which was maybe okay for the short run, but I realized a couple of years later it was really a bad idea. You have to keep that in perspective. If music turns into a job, then you start to treat it like that. And you could very easily lose the soul of what was there that got you started in the first place.
What happened with Tom Scholz's Boston debut would later occur with debuts by Guns N' Roses, Hootie and the Blowfish, and Alanis Morissette.
For people like me, and I think a lot of these other people you mentioned, who are not familiar with the world of big business and what a superficial thing it is, you tend to believe what people say, and you tend to believe a smile, you believe a greeting and a compliment, and you have to ignore that stuff in the world of business, in the music business itself, which is too bad.
Keeps on running.
Over the years since his first epic release, Tom Scholz has been characterized by some as reclusive, obstinate, ill-suited to the showbiz entertainment industry. But Tom Scholz and his current band just completed a tour of select cities in where else? Boston, two nights, and sold out. I'm Red Beard, back in the studio after this.